Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Roleplay Retcon does not own any part of the movies we retcon, nor are we associated with the artists who make them. Also, we might not be super kid-friendly, but we're not going to curdle your milk or anything.
The music in this series features No More Kings. Check them out at nomorekings.com or wherever you find music.
Now I've learned what the tears on your face meant. The tables turned.
Hey, indeed. Welcome to Roleplay Retcon's rehash episode. If this was your first series, this is like a little after party episode. We talk about the movie a little bit, talk about how we did. It's kind of a, it's a fummer episode.
A what?
A fummer. It's fun and it's kind of a bummer.
Oh.
Because it's over. But it is fun.
Okay. I see where your head's at.
Yeah, right. Right. And we do get to have this lavish party at this table set for hundreds of people that only we're at, oddly.
Oh, man, yeah. Is there shrimp?
There's shrimp. There is shrimp.
Oh, I didn't get any.
I like shrimp.
Oh, here, let me run down to the other side of the table. And I'm going to run back to the side of the table. Here's the shrimp.
You ran really fast for that shrimp, I
that
will
was,
say.
That yeah. was a speedy,
I've been doing
that
a lot a of, I've been doing some running. Yeah.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. I love that for you.
I love that for me. Anyway, this is... Yeah, here we go. Rehash. I was like, here we go. First thing. And then I was like, I don't really have a first thing. I think the first thing we should do is talk again about like just this movie. Just this movie. I'd like to remind everyone that in Rookie Camp a million years ago, Kendo said this was one of their favorite sci-fi movies ever.
Did I say that?
Yes.
You did.
You loved this movie then.
I mean, I did enjoy this movie. I did enjoy it. Did I say it was my favorite, though? I'm going to need
no,
a replay
no, no.
on that.
You said it was one. You said it was one of, and you qualified it as sci-fi. It wasn't one of your favorite movies
you've
ever
favorite
seen.
One of my favorite sci-fi movies that I've seen. Okay, that's probably fair. I probably said that because I don't know if I've seen a lot of them. Okay. All right. See, I know myself.
Listen,
know
I'm also myself. Not a big science fiction person. And let me tell you, there's a lot of better science fiction than this, Kendo.
Hey, you know, I won't know
that
until I see it.
That is a matter of opinion.
Thank you. It was a good movie. I just, you know.
That is a matter of opinion.
Hey. It's a matter of opinion that I enjoyed this movie?
No, you
ben,
said, you
and
said
then, it was. Ben, it is Kendo's turn to talk right now.
It is Kendo's turn to talk right now. I'm so sorry.
No, it was a good movie. I would watch it again. That's that on that.
What did you like about it specifically?
Oh, yeah. I enjoyed the world building was cool. Like the technology and stuff that they used, the very subtle world, like the environmental design, the set builders are going off on that. So were the costume designers. I don't know. It was mostly just a very fun movie outside of its like rampant misogyny, which is rampant. To be honest, it is rampant. It was a nice fun romp, as I'm sure some marketer would say.
They really wanted a reviewer to say that, I think.
They're like, come on, we just need someone. Someone's
romp. You can even say it's a bad romp and we'll just make it work.
Yeah, just say romp, please. And then it was finally said, they're like, oh, thank God. Oh my God. All of our investors, they just really wanted a romp. And we finally gave it to them, the romp they deserve.
I would agree that it was certainly a romp.
It was certainly a romp. Thank you. Thank you.
And I agree with I agree with a lot of what Kendo said, honestly. I agree that, like, the world building was cool. The set design was super cool. The misogyny was not cool, but rampant.
Mm-hmm. But rampant.
I think we agree on a lot of things.
Thank you.
I thought that the movie had a lot of potential, but there were some things that just really took me out of it. And, like, it's sad because I love Pam Grier and I really, really love Rosario Dawson.
Hell yeah.
And I really like Eddie Murphy. And, like, it had potential. But I feel like the worst parts for me were the action sequences. It felt like everyone was just kind of, like, jogging in slow motion and there were sparks. And I don't know if it's, like, a cinematography thing or, I don't want to say an acting thing. I don't know what the problems were.
It was a little bit acting.
The action sequences were just not my cup of tea. And also, like, it hinged on the idea that Eddie Murphy is this, like, super heartthrob stud. And they didn't build up the chemistry. It just kind of, we were just told to believe that it was there. And I didn't believe it.
It was also just a little bit gross. Like, oh, this is my best friend's daughter. Gonna get all over that.
Yeah, fortunately, they never explored that at all. So
it was not the worst movie I have seen. But I was just, I think it moved too slow or it moved too fast. Or I don't know, maybe it was a pacing thing.
I think for me, this was not the movie that was sold to me through the commercials, the trailers for it, because I thought this was going to be like this kind of campy, like, detective story, pseudo, like, superhero guy, like Eddie Murphy running around in a spacesuit, and the movie was not that at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I said at the beginning that I felt like it was a vanity project gone wrong, but I think I've changed my mind on that. I think it's the opposite now. I don't think that it went out of control. I think, to me, that it did everything by halves. Like, sometimes it's trying to be of, like, Futurama-style parody of pulp sci-fi. And then sometimes it's trying to be the thing it's parodying. And then, like, sometimes they're like, yeah, Pluto's a heartthrob. And then sometimes he's, like, a stupid goofball, but it's not executed all that well in, like, a Han Solo kind of way, I don't think. Sometimes he's a detective. Sometimes he's a cowboy. Sometimes he's a tycoon. Is he cool? Is he not? What is he? I don't know. So I think that's where I landed on it. I kind of agree, though, about the world building. And I think the reason why it just didn't hit me as much is because when I am either reading or writing, like if I'm consuming or creating, that's my least favorite part. I don't like world building. I don't care about it all that much. I don't really care a lot about, like, lore and stuff. I'm a real, like, character-driven narrative kind of guy. But I did like it, though. Yeah, I liked that everything looked like Universal City Walk. Or Downtown Disney or whatever, you know? So how did we do in comparison?
I guess generally I like that it was a bit more community focused overall, because I think one of the biggest issues of Pluto Nash is that, like, he doesn't really change over the course of that movie. Like, it's just kind of like, it's like all of his flaws that exist in the movie, it just kind of over time reveals that he's a more nuanced person. And so it gives the facsimile of, like, oh, he's growing, he's becoming, like, a better person, and, like, he's becoming, like, you know, less misogynistic. And he's like, no, there's just a side of him that isn't that, that was always there, but we just didn't, like, we didn't see it before. And it, like, kind of replaces growth with, like, just the unfolding of his character over time. it felt, for me at least.
That's interesting, because I've got this big bold note to myself in my notes. Mm-hmm. And it's like one of the first things I put, and it like stayed pretty much in the same place. And I said, the thing that I think will be better than the original was that the solution to the mystery, to the conspiracy, involves everyone. And they build a movement against the conspiracy. Instead of, it's about the whole world and not just Pluto.
Yeah.
That it's bigger than him. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think, yeah, I think that is something that we definitely did better. Is that me, Pluto, grew over time and like ended up having to like, it became a much more community focused, not so much of an individualistic, like, oh, it's about, like, I mean, even in the movie, right, the villain is also just Pluto, like, it's just a clone of him.
It's such a wild twist. And hey, by the way, spoilers for The Adventures of Pluto Nash, but like, I was like, well, I didn't see this coming, but it's also because it didn't make any sense.
Yeah, it just kind of happened. Which I think is, sometimes it's okay for a thing to just happen, because sometimes it's funnier that way.
I guess that was my one problem with our series, and I mentioned this to Ben about halfway through. It has to do with the setting and how there's no laws on the moon, and it's kind of hard to foment a revolution, rebellion in a situation where there are no laws keeping you down. You know, usually, you know, in something like that, when you're having an oppressive government stopping you, it's because they are putting laws in place that keep you from doing things, especially murder, which we were totally free to murder whoever we wanted to.
You were not, in fact, totally free to do that.
Well, we did it quite a lot,
Ben. And there were, in fact, consequences for doing it. Your life got pretty bad.
He murdered hundreds of people.
I murdered
hundreds
of
people. And, like, we won.
I don't know. I think he murdered dozens of people.
Maybe. Okay,
that's still a lot of people.
he kind of got, like, you know, if you eat fudge, you're like, fudge. And then, like, Alex ate too much fudge, and he was like, I don't like fudge anymore.
All I'm saying is, maybe there were consequences for my murdering of people, but no one put me in jail because of the murder. No one oppressed me because of the murder.
Well, okay, I hate to be the, like, well, this was the point thing, because if I have to tell you the point, then I didn't really get it across very well. Yeah. But, like, yeah, you were in a privileged position.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, you didn't feel the effects of the oppression until you did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think maybe you should have put us in a position where we felt the oppression a little bit more.
Yeah, also, especially since, like, he's a mutant, and if mutants are specifically feeling the oppression, he certainly wasn't privileged.
I mean, he was privileged in the sense that he wasn't privileged that way, but he was privileged in other ways.
Yeah, like, there was, like, an economic privilege of, like, had someone who was willing to give him a job and, like, pay him potentially more than other people, and then also protect him from people who would do things.
Now, granted, yes, Leroy was definitely the least privileged of the three of you, yes.
But I don't know, that was my one thing. It didn't click with me.
I wanted it to be, like, to understand that, like, to make the point that, like, fascism is not just a system of government. It's a philosophy. It's a force.
Yeah.
And so, like, it can exist without government.
Yeah. I personally didn't ever feel it. Or see it.
I think I understand that. I guess looking back on it, really the only major pressure that we felt was, like, I was the only one who felt pressure from, like, the economic standpoint of, like, not even economic. It was just like, oh, these incredibly rich people are coming. It felt like, it felt like, I guess, to what degree is the capitalist, like, bigger business crush, like, bigger businesses and corporations squashing, like, competition and, like, putting, like, like smaller businesses, mom and pop shops, so on and so forth, like out of businesses, like it, to what degree do we consider that like oppression? That is a kind of economic oppression, but that isn't like, I think that's as much as a world without laws can really get, without systems to maintain, like, to maintain or like set a status quo of like who are the people in power, which at that point are just the people with money that can get away with doing anything that they want in a world without laws. And like that is the kind of oppression that we faced primarily. I think if, I guess looking back, seeing how much of a big thing mutant oppression ended up playing in like the middle to late half of it, if, I guess if we had known that going into it, we could have played into that a little bit more.
I'm sitting here thinking too, because I'm thinking about,
yeah,
like not seeing it and not feeling it. And that was also like kind of part of it, because yeah, like fascism runs on complacency.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But then that's not very interesting in a story, now is it?
Yeah.
So maybe that's like a problem. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think we got to a point where it's like that becomes like the thing, right? Or at least for Pluto, is Pluto's recognition of his own complacency until it affects him. I guess me and my character engaged with it more than I can't really, obviously I can't speak for it. For Gen Z
what's my name, Kendo?
Oh no,
you can't read the screen, Alex. I changed it. Yeah.
Here's the thing, it wasn't that I didn't even remember your name, it was I was going to switch you and Ben's names and I was like, that's not right.
Hey, you won't be the first.
Yeah, when Alex and I started hanging out, he called me Nick for like a month.
Okay, that's a particular thing, because I have two brothers named Ben and Nick. And so I have a friend named Nick who I call Ben.
Oh yeah, you were in a hopeless situation. I completely agree with that.
That's too funny.
I think it was maybe a little slow at the beginning, because I set up this like mystery, and like maybe I did a good job, maybe it was intriguing, and then like the gameplay may have not been like very amenable to that, because it's not a mystery solving game, and so I was like, no, you're not supposed to be like going and shaking down people for clues. That's not how this works. And then like, so it took me a couple of sessions to like, I was like, okay, well, I'll just lean to that. I'll retool it. we're gonna change gears and we're gonna do it that way. But I think that's maybe one of the reasons why it felt a little uneven at first.
Gen Z, what did you think?
Yeah, you've been very quiet, Gen Z.
I thought it was different. It was definitely different from the movie.
It was different from the movie.
In a lot of ways. I don't know. It's hard for me. It is also hard for me to compare the two.
Yeah, they are kind of very different stories.
I think Jinsey and I approach this differently. In like opposite ways. Like, yeah, I tend to like just take a few things I like from the original thing and then like pretty much make something different out of it. And then Jinsey kind of likes to like just do the thing. Like, it's going to be different because that's how this shakes out. But like, mm-hmm. We just did Phantom of the Opera, you know? I mean, it was set in the 90s, but we just did Phantom of the Opera and it was cool. Mm-hmm.
That's certainly not a criticism. I don't think that it's a bad thing that it was different.
And I'm not a criticism of you either. I just think it's interesting. I just now realized like how different our approaches are.
Yeah, I mean, I had fun.
Okay, good.
I think I kind of also agree that like I didn't really know how to do this game. Not that the game was bad, because it certainly wasn't, and we're going to talk about that next, I'm sure. But like play the game in the story that you had set up, and it sounds like you kind of recognize that also early on.
Mm-hmm.
And also playing, like, because there wasn't like an authority that we were raging against. I mean, there was, but like others have pointed out, I also didn't see or feel that authority. So it was hard to rage against something that I didn't know what it was, or
a machine, if you will.
Yeah, but it was like, it was a different kind of machine that was like completely hidden.
Like a typewriter.
So, I don't know.
Man, to that though, so one thing that I feel did not work, and I'm going to probably cut it, was this like central figurehead, like Fallout style villain that they like meet at the end. They met at the end of the finale. That there it was his name is Rex Crater, and he was like a head in a jar, and it turned, and it, he was like, it kind of revealed himself to be like sort of the puppet master of Graceland. But like, you guys were like so done with it at that point.
it was just like this dude. It was this dude coming out and was like, aha, ha, now you get to be a part of, it's like the end of Now You See Me, right?
Right.
Where like you do the whole heist, you do all of it, and you're like, okay, yeah, this was super cool. And then at the end of it, a guy shows up and he's like, magic exists. And you go, fuck off. Fuck you, that magic. We did it without magic. Fuck you. And that's not right? to you specifically. Like, that was just my reaction. Like, I think the character made sense, but my genuine reaction to him was like, fuck off, dude.
I'm not sure the character made sense. Like, it wasn't my plan from the beginning. No. And I think I was just, I almost cut him before the finale, too. I was almost like, well, maybe we don't need him. And then I was like, nah, I'll put him in. And now I'm like, I should just listen to myself. So I'm pretty sure I'm going to cut him. But what he was basically me using him as like a device for me to like tell them all my like secrets about the world, all of my world building, which I hated doing. But I did put in the work, and I was going to spill it all. And like, I may end up just like probably cutting it and maybe put it on Patreon that you can hear the like alternate extended ending with Rex Crater. Because I did have a cool voice, if I'm being a little nice to myself. But he revealed that, like, there was no Jonah Grace, that she was just, like, this Betty Crocker, Mavis Beacon-style, like, made-up person that was so that there would be someone to worship, because that's in the fascism toolbox. It, like, requires adoration of a central figure. But I wanted to twist on the usual real world formula where, since there wasn't a government on the surface, that person that was being adored wouldn't be the person in charge. They'd be this fictional character that the secret figurehead would use as a like puppet, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I also was just like, I don't know. I don't care.
Yeah.
Like he was trying to like make us make a choice, and I was just like, what kind of fucking choice do you think we're gonna make? I didn't even want to let him talk. We were trying to murder him, and Ben was like, please stop, can you just let me say the things before you murder me?
I'm like screaming the things as Alex like as Leroy is like putting him in his gullet. Like,
yeah, he's right. hey, come on, don't you want to know? Don't you want to know why I'm evil?
And we're like, no, we don't fucking want to know. No one cares.
You're evil. Oh, don't you want to keep up the oppression? Come on. You could benefit. No. Or we could just get rid of it.
I also realized that it was just like exactly the same thing that happened in Mario. That it was to like just, you know, Bowser being like, hey, you want to take over for me?
Wait, that happens in the Mario movie?
Well, in our Mario movie.
Oh, that like, you know what? That's very funny.
Ben.
Yeah.
If it makes you feel any better.
Yeah.
Maybe you're just bad at being a fascist.
Oh, there you go. Hey. Thanks. Hey, thanks. Yeah. Thanks. I don't know. I thought I was actually pretty good at being a fascist. You guys,
you sure? You guys sure you want to be?
You guys didn't even know you were fascisting.
Trying to give you an olive branch there, Ben.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You smacked it away.
I think you know that it was not, though. I think you know that it was a backhanded call. But yeah, I know I'm almost certainly gonna cut that, because honestly, just with the seeds and then with the like nice little montage ending, I really think that's gonna be good enough. I haven't edited it yet as of this recording, but I think that's almost certainly going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yar,
Jinsy, I think that was a good idea. Let's talk about the game.
Okay.
I think I should say we played Moonpunk It's by Wannabe Games. You can buy it, I know, on DriveThruRPG and on their itch.io store.
Jensen gets to go first.
Yeah, Jensen does get to go
first. I liked the game. Yeah. I thought it was super cool. I really liked, man, one thing is there are so many different kinds of characters that you can choose, and that was a little daunting for me at first. Maybe it's not. Maybe it really isn't more than other systems, but for some reason to me it felt like it, and I wanted to play all of them.
It was a huge list. I completely agree.
But that is not a criticism at all, because they're all so cool, and I feel like the one that I did choose was pretty cool. I feel like she had a lot of cool moves, and I really like the leveling system, and I think, like, the setup, the way that the game works could be a lot of fun. I mean, like I said, I already said it before, I didn't really know how to play the game, and I also didn't know how to play it in the context of Ben's game and Ben's story. The roles, it's pretty simple and straightforward, I think, in terms of, like, how to do moves and stuff.
Alex, I know that you're not, like, the biggest fan of Power by the Apocalypse.
Yeah, this game was interesting. It had a lot of cool fluff to it. I should say this game's add-on, Moonpunk specifically. The character classes were cool. I liked a lot of, like, just the moves and just the whole vibe of it. I hate Power by the Apocalypse. I hate it so much. It's just not what I want to do with a game system. And I know I like the crunchier games. I like being a math nerd sometimes and having like a 50,000 mechanics for whatever BS. Me and the Power by the Apocalypse did not get along. And that's all I'll say. But Moonpunk is a nice
It's hat a good book. It's a good book, right?
It's a nice hat to hide the bullshit of Powered by Apocalypse.
I love Powered by the Apocalypse.
Boom.
And so I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think the moves are flavorful. They tell you a lot about the world as you're building it and kind of help lead in that direction to help create the kind of story that this game is trying to lean towards. I think the Tanstoffel mechanics are interesting as far as like debt and owing things to people and people owing things to you. I think it especially makes a lot of sense for a game that is centered around community action and like looking towards like a less money and like capitalistic sense of like of like how people interact with each other. Like it's not just, oh, like you owe me this amount. Like a debt can be money, but it can also be like, oh, you did something for me, I'm gonna do something for you. Or hey, you did this thing that I think is super awesome and I want to live up to that. And like that, like it finds new ways for people to engage and relate to each other outside of just like, hey, you want money, I've got it, or you have money and I would love it. In a way that I think is cool. The tag system is also interesting. We didn't get like terribly like too much into the tags. Not necessarily that like we should have. I think it
maybe
came up
you
as
didn't.
Often. I mean, I'm sorry, you did. I'm sorry, Ada Bird. Yeah.
Well, there was one tag. There was one tag.
There's one beautiful tag.
One beautiful tag. Eating pigeons.
Pigeon eater.
Yeah, I thought I liked it. I thought it was cool. Yeah, overall, I like Moonpunk. It's a really solid sci-fi game in a place where I think like a lot of there aren't a lot of Powered by the Apocalypse games that are just like you're
fun.
In space. No, that's not what I was going to say. That just like you're in space and like you're doing like a thing that isn't like Star Wars, you know,
mm-hmm.
Star
mm-hmm.
Wars or Star Trek. I think it's a nice little niche for anarchistic sci-fi narratives.
yeah, so this was indeed our first Powered by the Apocalypse game. And I thought I wouldn't like it that much. It was too, this game that was made by our friends at Wannabe Games was just too perfect for this movie for me to pass it up, so I went for it. And I thought, but I thought I wouldn't like it because it's all world building. And like I said, I hate it. but, and I also have to come up with like a lot of stuff off the cuff. But despite all that, I really ended up liking this. I don't know if I like Powered by the Apocalypse better than I do Fate still. I think I still might like Fate the best. And I don't have a lot of other PBTA experience to compare this to, aside from like, you know, I listen to Taz Amnesty, you know, of course. And listening to that and, maybe hearing a few episodes of the Crit Show, makes you think I really liked the political tilt of this. I really liked that part of it. And I thought it dodged being dry despite being political. And one of the things that the themes in it that like really stuck to me, and informed a lot of my writing in this is that, your enemies are human. And not so much in the sense that, like, fascists deserve, like, pity or compassion because of their humanity, but, like, not understanding that your enemies are human is not understanding your enemies. You'll lose if you don't understand your enemy. And, like, I took that to heart, and there's a lot in the book that, like, informs that. To say, like, yeah, your temptation is going to be to make fascism, like, faceless, like it is in, like, Star Wars. And it's like, no, it's made by people, and it's run by people, and... like, make sure your villains are people and, like, have names and faces and stuff. And so that, I tried to keep that in mind. Like, so I was like, okay, I'm not going to have, like, a bunch of soldiers. And I kind of ended up doing that. but still, it could have been worse. I had to do a lot of, world building for this. I had to kind of make a world. And early on when I was doing this, this is a story I've been waiting to tell. I had to write a lot of like kind of darkly funny evil corpo stuff, you know? But a few weeks before we started recording this, I was getting gas at a MAPCO and I was going inside for a drink. And there was one of those trash cans that's like square, right? It's square, so they put their ads and promos and stuff on the sides. And one of them said, MAPCO has you covered with the newest innovations. And there was a picture of 3 tins of chewing tobacco underneath that. And I knew right there that I could never write anything that darkly funny on purpose.
That's so funny.
So that was the energy I went into this with.
Thanks, MAPCO.
Thanks, MAPCO. Okay. This is the fun part. You guys ready for the fun part?
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't think I can handle it.
You need a second?
All right, I'm good.
You need to go purge? Okay. We are going to cast some characters, because we do movie shit around here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should we cast the eponymous character first?
Gats to.
If we would like.
Yes. Let's hear it.
We would.
So, my casting for the titular... Mm-hmm. Pluto Nash is Daniel Kaluuya. I said Kaluuya. That's different.
That is interesting. Thing. That would be an. I don't know. I guess I just saw him in Nope, and he's like, it's kind of funny in that.
Yeah, it's not. I'm thinking. So it's not necessarily for the comedic purposes because I think he can do. Because I think he can play. I think. The comedy of our version of Pluto Nash comes from his own self-seriousness. In a way that I think Daniel Kaluuya could like really like I think he would really get into the mindset of like I'm this moon I'm this space like playboy like hat like
a space boy yes
a space boy if you wanted to say who is like just like super into like his like own self and like the wealth and the like the flashiness and like the I'm the coolest person on the block kind of person, and then like seeing all of that blow up in his face and like desperately trying to like hold on to the pieces of that. I was just going to find more words to say.
I agree. I think that's an excellent casting choice.
Thank you.
And he's also like, he's such a good actor. I feel like he could totally pull it off. Mm-hmm. And he's really like charming as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Super charming.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good one.
Lots of riz.
So much riz. Do it.
I think he's also proven that he has like some range. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
That's a good choice. I like that. Ooh, that's such a good choice.
That's a good pull. That's a good pull. All right. Cincy. Who you got?
Me. My turn. Okay. So I've got my top three.
Starting with number three.
Yes, starting with number three. So starting with number three. Y'all listen, okay? Just listen. Rosario Dawson should be in this movie.
Okay. Okay.
She just should.
Okay.
And I don't think she should be in this movie as the character that she played in this movie. I'm thinking more like Sin City Rosario Dawson. Still Rosario Dawson, but a different character, obviously. Man, God, because she's just so talented and amazing and lovely and charming and such a badass, and she could just do such a good job if it wasn't the other movie. She's amazing, and they could have given her so much more to work with. But that's just my opinion. So Rosario Dawson is my number three choice. My number two choice is going to be Rihanna, because I also feel like she's a really good actress, and I always love seeing her in movies.
She's an amazing actress.
Have you ever seen her in Battleship, like the board game movie?
I didn't know that was a thing.
You didn't? Holy shit.
I remember this.
Holy shit, we got to talk about that sometime. But she's in it, and like that movie's not good. But like she is by far the best part of it. She elevates that movie so much.
I mean, it's the same with that other movie that we did, the horrible one. The one that Alex did.
Valerian, the City of a Thousand Planets.
Oh, right, because they just Valerian. Wasted her there.
God, she was the best thing in that movie.
She was the best part of that movie.
And I recently watched Ocean's 8 again. Amazing.
I didn't know there was an Ocean's 8.
And she's got some pipes. Yeah, it's all women.
Oh, that's right. I didn't know.
Sandra Bullock.
It's the most recent one, right?
I've never seen any of them, though, so don't be mad at me.
I saw the first one for the first time recently, and it's pretty good.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I sat down and I watched the three main ones one day.
I have only seen two of them, and I don't... Well, one of them is 8, and the other one, I don't know which one it was, but it's the one with... I don't know if they all have George Clooney and Brad Pitt, but it's the one with George Clooney and Brad Pitt.
they do.
Oh, well. That doesn't help then.
Nope.
Maybe 12? I don't know. 11? I don't know.
Because not Brad Pitt. The other one is Frank Ocean. Not Frank Ocean. Jesus Christ. Not Frank Ocean.
George Clooney?
Thank you. George Clooney is Mr. Ocean.
Yep. Whatever his first name is.
Yeah.
Frankly Ocean.
Not Frank Ocean.
Frank Ocean.
What is his name in Ocean's 11?
I don't know. Someone Google it.
Is it not Frank? It's
Danny Ocean.
It's Atlantic.
Oh, okay.
There is a Frank. Bernie Mac plays Frank Catton in it. And he's one of the 11.
He is one of the 11.
He is.
And my number one choice, who, as far as I know, has never acted ever, but... is my all-time favorite punk rock star, Laura Jane Grace. I think she could fucking kill it in this movie.
I like that you brought someone that we could bring in for an audition just to see how she did, but we have some backup choices in case it doesn't work
out. Yeah, right?
Like, holy shit, you came prepared.
Because I've never seen... I mean, she's never acted, I'm pretty sure, in anything. But she is... my favorite punk rock star, so she could certainly play a punk rocker. And she's just like amazing and talented and really charming and like super badass. Again, like all of the reasons that I chose the other two. But she's an actual punk rocker, so I feel like she could do a great job. If she had the acting chops.
All right, Alex. This is interesting because your character was probably the biggest departure from the film counterpart.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, how do you go from weird robot Randy Quaid to giant Catman? And I do think that my character would be a CGI character. 100%. So I was looking at this more of like a voice acting kind of role to fill instead of an in-place actor. And then I was like, well, I had a kind of a weird lilt to my accent, and it kind of drifted at one point, and that gave me the idea for a Mr. Mike Judge.
Yeah, okay.
Huh.
I mean, why the fuck not, right?
I mean, why not?
Okay.
Listen, I would never allow a CGI character in my movie, but you're right. It would at least be like a person in a costume and a person voicing it.
Mm-hmm.
And you just want him to do the Hank Hill voice, right?
Well, with a lilt on it, yeah.
Okay.
We'll let Mike Judge, you know, have a little freedom.
Yeah,
we'll let him do what he wants.
Yeah, he's got more.
Every
than
take,
voice.
Every take, you just go. Now that's that was good. Do you think for this next take you can make it a little bit more Texan?
Just scooch it a little bit more toward the propane.
Yeah.
And propane accessories.
And propane accessories.
Exactly. Yes.
What's funny is I think we got there because like Alex was like, "What should my voice be?" And I was like, "Well, we want to convey, like, we want to remind people that you're like a big cat guy. And so I think you should do like Snagglepuss." And I think that's where Alex like started.
Yeah. I was trying to do a Snagglepuss and it was
good, but it was weird. But you know, it was one of those voices that really drifts. did anyone come up with any like NPC casting ideas, some incidental characters?
I only came up with one.
What you got?
It was for Zoom Baby.
Well, you can't do that.
This is Michael Cera.
Uh-huh. Man, that's actually really good.
I know it is.
Well, listen, I'm going to tell you why it's good. I wanted someone that was like, both looked like he was an adult in his 30s and also looked like a baby. And like, I can't believe I never thought of Michael Cera, the person who perfectly encapsulates that.
Yep.
Yeah. And also, like, Michael Cera can be both pathetic and a little intimidating.
You're intimidated by Michael Cera?
Yeah, what's the intimidating? Where did that come from?
There's no better fighter than him. I watched him kill, like, 7 guys.
What are you... What? When?
Scott Pilgrim. He's doing Scott Pilgrim.
He wasn't intimidating any of that.
I don't understand why you're attacking me over this.
Who is?
Everybody.
Except you. Look, I'm not attacking you. I'm trying to see the vision. I get what you're saying.
Yeah,
I might need to be convinced a little bit more, though.
We're questioning at best.
Okay. But do you know who else? That actually may be a better casting choice than what I came up with. But do you know who else I think would actually be good in this role? Who could redeem himself in our eyes?
Oh.
Clive Owen?
Well, no. Clive Owen's great.
Nah.
Doesn't need to be redeemed for anything. Dane DeHaan.
Hold on, I have to Google this.
Dane DeHaan played Valerian in Valerian.
Oh, God. Why would we cast him as anything? I'm sorry, that was...
No, he's actually a really good actor. He's just terrible in that movie. But everything I thought that made him terrible as Valerian would make him great in this role.
You mean lifeless and skeevy?
Also another person who was looks like an adult and also a baby.
And also a baby.
But like, just imagine this guy like looking at Pluto like stormy and jealous as he watches Tracy take the stage instead of him. And imagine him both as this like pathetic guy stumbling through his stand-up routine and as a guy in a $5,000 suit sitting at the desk at the head of a dynasty.
Okay.
Damn it. I see it.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah. He's both intense and childish. And I wanted to cast someone that people would have some trouble forgiving, but not hate him. I think this is where Michael Cera doesn't work so great. See, there's this thing now where people, well, someone will play a despot that has murdered scores of people in cold blood. But because they're played by like Tom Hiddleston or Adam Driver, people are like, I think I could forgive him because he might kiss me if I do.
No, what if I?
Yeah, I definitely don't want this guy to kiss me. I'm sorry. I need to bring it back a little bit. Sorry, Dane DeHaan. I'm sure you're a lovely person in real life.
I don't think you have to apologize for not wanting him to kiss you.
I'll never hear this.
He might, and I don't want to hurt his feelings.
Now, what if he's secretly a fan?
It's not that I don't like you as a person. I've never seen you in anything else. It's just I didn't like that movie. I'm sorry, Dane DeHaan.
Oh, well,
I take it all back.
And it was bad, and it sure did taint our opinion of him. I'm trying to give him a redemption arc here, and I think this could work.
The thing about Frank Krakowski is that I never liked him.
Michael Frankowski.
It's not Frank Frankowski?
No, I named him Michael Frankowski because there's a song by No More Kings called Michael, and I'm going to use it. I haven't used it yet, but I'm going to use it. He's named after a character in the movie. His name is Tony Frankowski.
The thing about Michael Frankowski is that I don't like him ever.
And I wanted that. I wanted it to be a toss-up whether you could ever like him and forgive him or not.
Well, I don't, for the record, but no one asked
and
me.
And see, if you cast Michael Cera, people are like, oh, Michael Cera, I love him.
Yeah, but there's a lot of people that find Michael Cera annoying also.
I just can't imagine that.
You could have done the other Michael Cera.
There's another Michael Cera?
Yeah, you know who it is. The other guy?
I don't.
Sarah Michael.
I don't. Is there literally another person named Michael?
No, the Facebook guy.
Oh, Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah, that one. You could have done him easily.
Spider-Man.
You put in the work.
Look, there's some histories that should not be told.
See, I almost did it. I did almost did Andrew Garfield, but then I was like, no. I can't cast a guy who's famous for playing a superhero if I'm going to be like, surprise, I was a superhero the whole time reveal. Like, you can't do that. Yeah.
Because everybody would know immediately.
Before we move into our goodbyes and our housekeeping, does anyone have anything else? Any other thoughts they didn't get out of their thought boxes?
Thank you for having me.
We're not doing that yet.
Oh. Well, that was my last thought.
No.
And then Kendo finally was free. There he goes. He's flying out the window.
Oh no, Kendo. Out the window.
You can find Kendo's actual play podcast, Tales Yet Told, anywhere you get podcasts. It's a queer-led show that's very focused on like character-driven stories. They're on a break right now, although I have recently learned that they are recording again. But now's a good time to listen to the first two seasons and their sci-fi miniseries, Prayers in the Static. Their first full season is Strangers in the Wood, which is hard to describe, but it's about a bunch of kids that get lost in a strange forest world, and it's part comedy, and it's part whimsy, and part horror, which is just Kendo's brand, let me tell you. The second season is Whispers in the Sea, a fantasy pirate epic that has a lot of those same touchstones. It's funny, it's gay, it's a little scary. You can also just find Kendo in a lot of corners of the TTRPG world. They are on an episode of Party of One, where Kendo and Jeb Stormer play an original game that Kendo made about making a map and creating a pirate crew. And a story about going and like finding treasure on this map that you make. It's pretty cool. Thank you to No More Kings for letting us use their music. It was a blast. No More Kings just came out with a new mini album that has three very different versions of their hit song Sweep the Leg, which was doing the whole see it from Johnny Lawrence's point of view way before the TV show Cobra Kai was. There's a couple of different remixes of the song, and there's a ballad version, and there's also a bonus track called Missy that's really good, and I wish I'd had time to include it in our soundtrack. Coming up, our next thing is going to be a one-shot. We're going to do Disney's Home on the Range, which was not the worst movie, but it was kind of a flop by Disney standards. It made about 100 mil less than they thought it was going to make, and it got kind of middling reviews. And we're going to redo
that. That was a Disney movie?
Did you not know that?
No.
It's really not the worst, but I fell asleep watching it. I thought it was a little boring. But anyway, we're going to do that with Grant Howitt's The Witch is Dead with Grant Howitt. That'll be fun.
Ooh.
I know, right? Ooh. That'll be a one-shot. And then after that, we're going to do another one-shot with James D'Amato, the creator and former host of the One-Shot podcast and the author of the Ultimate RPG series. And we're going to play his game, Oh Captain, My Captain, which is a Descendant for the Queen game, which means it's based on Alex Roberts' For the Queen, which we played for our Bodyguard episode. And we're going to use his game to remake Waterworld. And then after that, Alex, tell us what you're doing.
I am going to take a nap because I'm going to be real tired.
And then after that?
Oh, then after that, we're going to do my series, which is The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Oh, I love that movie.
Oh, yes.
Nice.
I used to watch it so much when I was a kid.
I did
it's
too.
It's bad.
I did too.
It's bad.
I forgot about when we were first recording this and Kendo just like went through the list of the movies we've done and they were like, I like that one. I like that one. That one's good.
Bad movies are good sometimes.
Okay. I'm sorry to interrupt Alex's announcements, but.
I'm sorry.
Me watching bad movies has like, it's like calibrated my tastes. Watch some bad movies on purpose.
Oh, I do. I do because Ben makes me sometimes.
But yeah, we're doing the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. I'm going to update it and make it kind of like a modern day League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, somewhere around era 2015-ish. So we're going to have modern heroes like Marty McFly and people from that era instead of 1800s people. It's going to be cool. Haven't got all my ducks in a row yet, but we're going to be having our guests, some buddies of ours from the Flash Fantasy podcast, Ryan, who's usually their GM, Laurel. Oh, we're also playing Savage Worlds because we're going to have so many more people that I'm just going to play a system that I'm used to.
And I'm going to shut up about it.
I am excited.
I really am excited about that because like the first time we played it, we kind of played a light version of it, sort of. You automated a lot of stuff. And I feel like we're the way we're approaching the show now, I'm going to be able to get into it a little more.
I love Savage Worlds so much.
Well, I guess that's it.
No.
No?
No.
We gotta say goodbye to Kendo.
Well, I mean, that's what it is, though.
We gotta sing Kendo's praises.
This is the bummer part.
This is the bummer part.
I think you have the straight bummer.
Kendo, you're so cool, and I really enjoyed playing with you.
Oh, you guys are cool. I enjoyed playing with all of you. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for being here.
We
have done this about a dozen times now, and it has never gotten easier.
I am going to need you to leave the stick, though.
That's their stick.
No, it's a stick. We his stick's outside the window.
Yeah, I took it back outside. Yeah.
You need sticks. To leave that.
Okay. I'll just.
Is anyone going to remember this joke?
I don't even remember this joke.
Oh, it's from Rookie Camp.
Oh, God. Remember is this the window joke?
This is the window joke. Good job.
This joke is a good joke.
Yeah. It's gone all the way to the wall.
Well, before I start sweating down my, you know, balls.
Your balls.
I'm going to come out the way I came.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Kendo, we're going to miss you so much. Bye.
I'm going to miss you all so much.
Bye.
Why can't this just last forever?
Say it, Alex. Say it. Just end it.
Bye.
Bye, kisses.
The moon can offer no relief. His cell phone shakes him from his sleep. It always seems to be